Try again.
Okay. Well, is it a fast lane? I don't think they have fast cars.
She's in the fast lane.
The fast.
No, I'm saying about she wasn't really that fast. It's the 1930s. Weren't those cars going like 10 miles an hour?
I'm just telling you what the song says. Hey there. Welcome to season 13 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is all things residential. We are talking about ladies who were involved in residential projects.
As always, we're not experts, okay? We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
Today's episode, we will talk about Verna Cook Salomonsky Shipman, a residential architect in New York who focused on historic architecture and Mexican residential architecture.
Mm.
I'm Lizzie Rahr. Apparently, it's National Biscuits and Gravy Week this week, and I love biscuits and gravy, so I need to go find some in celebration after this here in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm Nurjini Rivas. It's also National Line Dancing Week, which is funny because I don't like line dancing, even though I live in Houston, Texas.
Sacre bleu.
Yeah. Wow.
I've never liked it.
Don't say it out loud. They might kick you out.
I mean, I like watching other people do it. I don't want to do it.
If you don't know what's going on, it could be very confusing.
It is. I'm bad at following a choreography.
Well, I'm Jessica Rogers, and I do like line dancing, but maybe not rodeo line dancing. I don't know. Well, and also, along with all of these things, it's also National Waffle Week, so it's a good breakfast week. And I'm based out of Miami, Florida.
Hit up a Waffle House.
Oh, yeah. I could probably get biscuits and gravy at Waffle House, and I love Waffle House. That's fun fact. I love the Waffle House. It's one of my favorite breakfast places.
Yeah.
And there's one that's actually not that far from a place that does line dancing. Ooh, I know what I'm doing this week. It's going to be a day.
Gonna hit them all.
Hit them all.
Well, today we're off to the state of Washington. Verna Cook was born on October 19th, 1890 in Spokane, Washington. Her parents were Harlan J. Cook, a newspaper editor, and Mara S. Taylor Cook, a concert singer. From what I could tell, she had one sister, but not sure if she was younger or older.
Mm.
I'm so intrigued, first, by how we're going to get from Washington State to Mexico, and second, by her mom, the concert singer.
Yeah, from Washington to Mexico, that seems so drastic. And I wonder how it was growing up with a concert singer. Like, could you imagine your mama calling you to wake you up and she's like, just like,
wake up!
Right? Verna! Sister Verna!
Your mothers didn't wake you up with song?
No.
Mine did.
Yeah.
Well, she turned on the radio. Like, she would, you know, pop in a CD, but she didn't sing.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know much about Verna's early childhood, and I don't have any more information on the concert singer situation, sadly. But I know that the family stayed in Spokane, and Verna graduated from Spokane High School in 1908.
Let's imagine she grew up in a musical household where she would hear her mom practicing her songs often. That happened to me. Growing up, I learned my dad's songs just by listening to him practice them when he was trying to learn them.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And I was thinking that too. I'm sure she heard singing around. And she had to have been musically inclined.
Well, post-graduation, Verna and her sister, I have no name for this sis, moved to the other side of the country to study at the Commonwealth Avenue School for Young Ladies in Boston, Massachusetts.
We will christen her as No Name Sis. So this school was like a postgraduate school? Why didn't they go to a university? I think by then there should have been a few that would take them.
Yeah, I don't know why this was the school of choice.
Okay.
Unclear on that. But rather than going to a university in the States, Verna traveled to Europe with her cousin and ended up enrolling at the École Spéciale d'Architecture in Paris.
Yeah, I mean, who needs a university in Boston when you can go to Paris?
Mm.
Okay, sounds like an adventurous choice. I hope at this time she knew French. Also, goodbye, no name sis. Hello, no name cousin.
Yes. So she studied here for 2 years until 1911, but then she ran out of money.
Oh.
So she had to come back to the States and ended up back on the West Coast in Salem, Oregon. She took a job working for William Knighton in his architectural office for 2.5 years while she saved up money to go back to Paris and finish her studies.
What a journey.
Yeah, what a whirlwind.
Yeah. So, 1914, she has all her money saved up to return to Paris. But what happened around this time?
Mm. Oh, no. World War I. Stay alive, Verna.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, sadly, that put a stop to her plans to return to Europe. Instead, she decided to enroll at Columbia University in New York.
Gossip Girl here, and I have the biggest news ever. One of my sources, ELRAR90, just sent me this. Spotted at Columbia University, books in hand, Verna Cook. Was it only 2 years ago our IT girl mysteriously disappeared from, quote, École Spéciale d'Architecture in Paris? And just as suddenly, she's back in higher education? What will she do next? Keep those updates coming, Elle.
XOXO, Gossip Girl.
Wow, what an entrance to New York for Verna.
Yeah, she's already made the blogs.
That's right. While she was studying at Columbia, she was also working as a junior architect in the office of Dwight James Baum from 1916 to 1919. During this time, she also did some work for Howard Major and Electus D. Litchfield. So it sounds like she was doing good work to be getting moonlighting jobs on the side, all while studying.
Yeah.
I'm in awe of this lady getting all these different work experience while in architecture school. With what time? Unclear. Now that we're on the subject, what are your guys' thoughts on counting the time someone is an intern while in college as years of experience?
This actually was a topic that came up at our office the other day because we have a lot of interns. I don't know about y'all, but our interns, like, they do work, like, on our plans and stuff. But sometimes their tasks are, like, running errands for us, like, picking up or dropping off drawings. So, like, I think that they should get some experience hours for their time that they work on our drawings or, like, for site visits. But, like, sometimes our interns are there just for the summer. So I wouldn't count that as, like, a whole year. So they shouldn't be putting, like, I have a year of experience when it's, like, you have a summer of experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it really depends on how many hours they worked, what length of time, and the tasks that they were doing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the work that you're doing fits into the categories provided in AXP, then I don't see why it can't count towards that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I had time count to AXP when I was an intern, so maybe I'm biased. But like Jessica said, like, I was working on working drawings or visiting sites and stuff like that, doing stuff that other employees would have to do if I wasn't there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the years of experience qualifier feels different to me whether like your hours count towards AXP or whatever. But because I was only there for 2 months, like you said, like over the summer. So I don't think that necessarily counts as years of experience.
Yeah. It came up because I was having a discussion with someone and they were pulling up that they had years of experience, but actually they just graduated like a few months before. And then the years of experience that they had was as an intern.
Mm.
So we're talking about two separate things, AXP credit and like work experience. But according to the AIA, if you look at their salary calculator, the years of experience that you count, they're all years of experience post-grad. So like when you apply for jobs and you say like, oh, I have all these years of experience, but you just graduated a month ago, that's not, according to the AIA's eyes, that's not true.
I see.
Because they're counting post-grad experience.
Interesting. I didn't know that. And knowing that kind of makes it a little bit more black and white.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Verna.
Ooh, all right. Back to Verna. So, we don't actually know if she got an official degree from Columbia in the end, but we know that she was enrolled there and working during this time.
Oh, man, I sure hope that she graduated.
Yeah. I hope there wasn't any mess about women and not getting their degrees nonsense.
I know. I hope so, too. I didn't find anything about that, but...
Yeah. Or if she left because she felt like it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So during this time, she meets Edgar Salamonsky, who was also studying architecture at Columbia, and they got married in 1919.
Congrats, Verna. But who is Edgar? What do we know about him?
Well, we know that he's an architect.
What else?
Yeah. I just told you. He's a guy from architecture school.
Okay.
The story's not about him. It's about
That's all we get today. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know who she's marrying.
That's what I know about Edgar.
All right. We're good with that.
In 1920, the Salamonskys opened their own architecture firm in Manhattan. They worked on residential projects in Westchester County, north of the city. Several of their plans were published or won competitions. One of their homes was listed in Henry Atterbury Smith's 500 Small Houses of the 20s in 1923, and in 1928, they got second place in the House Beautiful magazine's Small House Competition.
Okay, we see you, Edgar and Verna.
That's right. Verna and Edgar also wrote and published together. In 1926, they put out a catalog of the furniture at the Met, complete with sketches and drawings of the various furniture styles. Verna also wrote on her own for House Beautiful and House and Garden. She wrote about the service entry, storage areas, linen and china closets, and other space-saving techniques in the home.
That sounds really cool.
It does. I love that Verna is also getting her words and thoughts out there.
Mm-hmm. So they were doing it. But sadly, in 1929, Edgar committed suicide and Verna continued the firm on her own, renaming it Verna Cook Salamonsky Architect.
That is so tragic. I'm so sorry for their family.
Agreed. How sad. They had only been married for 10 years.
That's so little. And she would have been 39. That is too young to become a widow.
Mm-hmm.
I know, right? Mm. Luckily, she continued to get commissions after his death, which I was really happy to read because we know that that might have been a deterrent for some clients at this time. She advertised herself as specializing in Georgian, colonial, and English-style homes.
I am so glad that Verna was able to thrive on her own.
Yeah, way to keep going.
Yeah. In 1930, she got licensed in the state of New York. 2 years later, she added licenses in Connecticut and Pennsylvania as well. She also kept writing and published Masterpieces of Furniture Design in 1931.
Get it, get it, get it, get it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Verna designed hundreds of houses in the suburbs of New York City. They ranged from large 20-room homes for $100,000 to small playhouses for children. She also gave herself credit for finding the right materials for each job and that was part of why she was successful. She also had a good relationship with the workmen on the construction sites.
Architects have to be on good terms with everyone. The client, the consultants, the GCs, the vendors.
Yep. A great project happens when all of these elements work harmoniously together.
Yeah. Apparently, she also acted as a sort of mediator on site with disagreements between the workers. And she said, they can't argue as violently with a woman as with a man. Not sure if all women would agree with this, but I kind of see what she's getting at least in this time period.
Yeah, probably in the early 1900s, that tracks.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that she was using her womanly ways to bring order and civility. And they say women are too emotional.
Well, in 1934, she was invited to join the Architectural League of New York and was the only woman asked. She was also a critic at the School of Design for Women in Philadelphia and the New York School of Interior Decoration.
She's so fancy, you already know.
From New York to Pennsylvania and all around. Go, Verna.
You mean she's in the fast lane from New York to Philadelphia.
It's been a long time since I heard that song, okay?
Verna had gained quite a name for herself. So in 1935, she got chosen to design the ideal house for House and Garden. The plans were published in the July 1935 issue. And ladies, it actually got built.
OMG. what an honor. Not just that, but like a double honor for her design to get featured and published, but then to have it get built too. Oh, amazing.
We need photos of this. What does the ideal house look like? Also, ideal for who? The readers of House and Garden?
I will have a photo of this one. And I guess ideal is for the readers or for anyone in general. I didn't read the project brief. This is just the title of the competition. But the house was in Scarsdale, New York, outside of the city. The magazine kept tabs on the construction and published updates as it was built. It cost $25,000 to build. Then it got open to the public for people to tour after it was completed.
Oh, how lovely.
Ooh, how cool would it be if we could tour it today?
Art Funchalist.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
Well, in 1938, there was a survey done of architects who were doing work in Westchester County. Verna was one of the 18 that they surveyed. So the survey showed that colonial-style architecture was still going strong, and even though modernism was on the rise elsewhere, these architects didn't think it was going to take over in the next decade. Apparently, Verna agreed and was quoted saying, "I cannot conceive that in a decade we are to be weaned away from the finer heritages and in their places accept models or standardized design. That houses will be considered as automobiles, prefabricated and bought, as it were, off the shelf, is no doubt the logical prediction for some distant future. I prophesy for the near future homes of Westchester more simplicity in design, a great subtlety of color combinations, and a more restrained use of ornamentation."
Well, maybe for that area where she practiced, she was right. I don't know the history there. But I, for one, am glad modernism caught on, because I like it.
I agree. I do love me some modern, contemporary. But it's actually interesting to hear her talk about this or bring up that style now in the context of residential. Because, like, colonial-style architecture, it still exists today. Some might prefer it over modern.
Yeah, it's one of those things I don't see ever completely going away. There's a lot of history there, for better or for worse.
Yeah, and I think, like, her point of houses becoming prefab, choose it off the shelf or whatever, like, that's still
a thing.
Isn't very common, right, in that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But she was correct in the idea of, like, less ornamentation,
yeah,
simplicity, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
true, yeah.
Her work reflected these attitudes as time went on, with more simplified designs, but still rooted in historic style. It was apparently popular, too. She got published in many magazines and journals, such as American Architect, Architectural Forum, and Architectural Record. Then, in 1937, she became a member of the AIA.
Yay! Especially after last week's episode.
Yeah, right? I was just thinking the same thing. Like, what made this different? It was around the same time, unless give or take a year that our last week's lady, Mary, actually, I don't know, but good for Verna.
Yeah, makes it feel like it was a local issue more than a national issue.
Right.
With it being New York versus Kansas.
Yeah, yeah. That answered last week's question. There you go, Nargini.
Yeah, I guess so.
It took us a week to figure it out.
Yikes.
Well, in 1939, the World's Fair was in New York in Queens. The theme was Building the World of Tomorrow. And as part of the fair, they built an exhibit called Town of Tomorrow, which featured 15 houses as demos to show off different architecture, designs, and technologies. And Verna was asked to design one of the demo houses.
That is such a big deal. That's one of the more famous world fairs and one of the most well-known exhibitions.
Yes, yes, and yes. How awesome. This all also adds to our thing that we should really do a charrette on world's fairs.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her design was called Garden Home, and it was the 13th of the 15 houses. It wasn't terribly modern stylistically, as you might guess, based on her previous work, but it utilized her experience with floor plans and material choices. It was a two-bedroom, one-bath with a glass block wall and a conservatory. It cost $13,000 to build. The design was intended for a middle-class suburban family. It was the third most popular house in the exhibit.
Okay, tell us there's pictures of this, please. I can see myself and my husband living in this house. And her dog, too.
Even though it's not modern?
Yes. I'll take it.
Well, yes, there are photos. And there was a couple visiting the fair on their honeymoon, Dwight and Kate Wade. They loved Verna's house and chose it to build for themselves. They took the plans to Sevierville, Tennessee, and built the house there. According to the Tennessee Historical Society, the Wade House is the only Town of Tomorrow house plan that was built. As far as they know, yet the Society of Architectural Historians mentions that it's one of a handful. So there may be others out there.
Mm.
This woman, honor after honor, just when you think she can't get more impressive, she surprises us more and more.
Talk about some good marketing. Now, for those of you that might not know where Sevierville is located, like me, it's on the east side of Tennessee near Pigeon Forge, right outside of Knoxville.
Near Dollywood, baby.
Yeah.
Ooh, is that close to where you're going to be, Jessica?
No, I'm on the complete opposite side.
Other side.
Oh, man.
Memphis.
Of the state in Memphis.
Maybe you want to change your plans.
I don't know anyone there. So, actually, I do know someone in Knoxville, my former coworker. Hey, Lisa, if you're listening.
Hey.
But I don't have plans to go there.
Well, actually, you know what? Let's not plan that arc furniture just yet because it's privately owned.
Oh.
But maybe one day it will be a museum where we can go and take lots of pictures.
Yes.
Yeah.
In 1939, Verna's eyesight really took a turn, so she retired and closed her firm. She decided she was going to live abroad and live her best Eurogirl life. So in June 1939, she moved to France. 4 months later, she had to come back because World War II had started. So her Eurogirl era was very short-lived.
Yes! Oh, I heard that date.
I know, that date. Like, oh. Child, the girl just wants to be in Europe. Let her live.
Seriously, World War is ruining her plans every time.
Every time.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe she brought them on.
Oh, don't put that on Verna. No.
Okay, you're right. I take it away.
Well, not long after she got back, she met this guy named Warren Butler Shipman. He was an architectural engineer by trade and had a photography hobby. They got married sometime shortly after.
Well, this took a positive turn, at least.
Yeah.
You know what? World wars also leading her to find love every time.
Oh, that's true.
It's true. During World War II, they lived in D.C. Verna volunteered with the Red Cross Arts and Skills Corps, teaching art to injured soldiers, and with the American Women's Voluntary Services. Warren worked for the Lend-Lease Administration. After the war, Warren was relocated to the U.S. Embassy in London, so they went there for a year, and Verna got to live her Euro girl dreams for a while.
Finally!
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this calls for a song, but I don't know which one.
Something about a celebration?
Oh. Celebrate good times, come on.
Mm-mm-mm-mm. Celebration. Mm-mm-mm-mm.
Well, she did not work while she was in London, and apparently she reapplied for her passport while she was there. And under occupation, she put architect instinctively. And the guy reviewing her application raised his eyebrows and changed it to housewife. She wrote about it in her diary and said, I should like to measure up to this title, but I am far from a master of its technique.
Boo.
You have got to be kidding me. I also like her little retort.
I don't know. She's like, I'm no good at that job, sir. Like,
yeah, jeez.
Well, in 1947, the couple moved to L.A. Warren had gotten a job at the Investors Syndicate advising on mortgage investments. Once they were there, Verna started to work towards getting licensed in California, which meant that she would have to take an exam and show proof of her work since 1937. It sounds like she compiled all the info, but there isn't a record of her actually applying for the California license, so I don't think she ever got it.
Mm-hmm. So I thought her husband was an engineer. Why is he doing all this other stuff?
Well, people change career paths sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it says he was trained as an architectural engineer, but then, I don't know.
I really shouldn't talk. Look at my career. Never mind. Well, back to Verna. You know, we always say document your work. And here's another good reason as to why it's important.
That's a good point. Lately, I've been thinking that having a portfolio of my work is not as important as it used to be for me because lately I'm project managing more than designing. But it takes a village to design and build a project. The projects I manage are mine too. And if nothing else, it's important for ourselves to see the work collected. I should practice what we preach. I should update my portfolio.
That's right.
Actually, on a side note, my boss, she's trying to get reciprocity for another state so that she can get licensed. And now they're questioning her work experience, even though she's been working like for 10 years and has been licensed for like, I don't know, 5 to 6 of those years. So, yeah, now she has to go back and document and find documentation of it. So,
wow.
Yeah, everyone should be documenting their work, even okay. if it's just to have.
Yikes. Yes.
Yeah. I forgot which state it is, and I don't want to put them on blast because
we've revealed enough.
Yeah.
Well, they decided to live in Brentwood in L.A., and Verna designed their house in 1947. Come 1950, Warren decides to retire because he's been having some heart issues. They moved south to Rancho Santa Fe. While living there, Verna designed 2 houses in the Spanish colonial style that was common in that area.
Ooh, okay. I was wondering if her thoughts on residential style would change based on her travels, like from where she was living, because LA doesn't necessarily give me colonial style vibes.
Yeah, there is like shingle style a lot out here, but it sounds like she was, you know, designing with the cultural style in mind. In 1958, Warren and Verna went to Cuernavaca, Mexico to visit friends. And I think we've mentioned before that we have been to Cuernavaca. So basically, we breathe the same air as Verna.
Amazing.
Yeah, we have. You know, when I heard about Cuernavaca, I thought, who would know this place? Like, when we first went? Like, I mean, this small town, it's beautiful. But it's not like mainstream media. However, I think we've mentioned, like, 2 or 3 of our late, well, now 3 of our ladies are going to this town. How cool.
Yeah. Anyway, Verna was inspired by her trip to Mexico and spent 9 months traveling around Mexico, sketching and documenting Mexican houses. Warren would take photos and she would sketch details and write captions for the photos. She and Warren published 5 books on Mexican domestic architecture from 1960 to 1970. They are titled The Mexican House, Old and New, Mexican Interiors, Mexican Homes of Today, Decorative Design in Mexican Homes, and Houses of Mexico, Origins and Traditions.
OMG, that sounds like a dream. Now that's what I call retirement. That's how you retire, okay?
Yes, forget bingo. This is my new retirement goal. We should get our hands on one of these books, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Warren died in 1972, and Verna moved to La Jolla outside of San Diego. She lived there until she died in 1978.
What a full life. My goodness. Every time you described a 10-year span of her life, she achieved what most people do throughout their entire careers. I'm glad that she was able to achieve such success, recognition as an architect, that she found love twice, and that fate finally allowed her to live in Europe and then Mexico for a while.
Right?
Yeah. Jeez. What a life.
All right. We've now reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Without further ado, drumroll please. Tatiana Bilbao.
Tatiana.
So, Tatiana Bilbao was born in Mexico, and apparently there are a lot of architects in her family, including her grandfather. So she was exposed and interested in the profession from a young age. She studied at Universidad Iberoamericana and got her Bachelor's of Architecture and Urbanism in 1996. And in 1998, her thesis was awarded Best Architecture Thesis of the Year.
Best Thesis of the Year? That is awesome. Now I'm curious to look it up.
OMG, how have we not had Tatiana as a caryatid? Like, I had to double take and check our show notes to see, because she's well known.
Yeah, she's a starchitect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, after graduation, she worked for the city on urban planning and housing developments. In 1999, she started Laboratorio de la Ciudad de México with Fernando Romero. Their work was mainly high-end homes. Then, in 2004, Tatiana went off to form her own firm, Tatiana Bilbao Estudio, an urban think tank. The firm focuses on sustainable design and does a lot of affordable housing projects as well.
Boss business owner in the house.
Yeah, loving it.
So, her firm has been focusing on creating an affordable housing prototype. They researched and interviewed future inhabitants of these housing units to find out what they wanted and needed in a space. Then they came up with a design that can adapt as needed to the geographic, social, or cultural conditions. And the prototype has a base layout with a cinder block core, and then it uses low-cost materials around that that can be added onto as needed so it can change in scale and size depending on who's going to be living in it or later can be added onto. Their site says, "The project's objective is providing every Mexican family the possibility to have access to an intelligently designed, affordable solution for a house."
What a great mission. I just read a great interview with her on Madame Architect. She's so accomplished and so insightful. She discusses her trajectory as an architect, lessons along the way. It was a very meaningful read. Highly recommended. You should put that link on the show notes, Lissy.
Ooh, agreed. I want to read that. Because Tatiana does such amazing work, and I think the work that she does with her think tank and her work on affordable housing is what she is known for. Like, before hearing this bio, like, I think we probably came across her work before, either through her publications and stuff. So I'm glad that we're actually talking about her now, like, long overdue. And I can kind of see her connections with Verna a little bit, too. So, good job.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects that we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your history buffs. Tell them all. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. Write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise at shebuildspodcast.com/merch.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X at SheBuildsPod. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.
She was also a critic at the School of Design for Women in Pennsylvania.